you may now be the DJ. When people hear I'm a DJ, their eyes glimmer with excitement. By definition alone, being a DJ sounds like a glamorous job filled with fun, booze, and music. What's there to not like? I applied to be a DJ on a whim. I knew I had the voice, radio background, and a love for music. A day or so later, on a Sunday when I was writing, I got a call from my soon-to-be boss and not his real name, Sean. "I never call on a Sunday," Sean said, like he was the Chick-fil-A of business and viewed it as a non-work day. "But I saw your application and was really impressed. Can you come in for an interview?" Soon, I would walk into a Luxe office in Brooklyn Heights. The area around the office looked a bit warehouse grunge, but the interior featured velvets, upholstery, textures, bright, colorful lighting systems, and fancy technology. I sat down with Sean and his right-hand man, not his real name, Juan. At the time, I didn't have much of an impression. I knew I could do the work and make good money, and the result seemed fun. I don't remember much from my first wedding with Sean and Juan. I did a little microphone work, learned about the programs, but otherwise just did a bunch of teardown and setup. I was very chaotic when I first started DJing. I used to be the wedding DJ who would scream during songs, dance with the crowds, climb speakers and furniture like some Rolling Stones-inspired mess. I'd go out and dance to the wobble. I'd go out and socialize with the bridal party. I'd chat it up over a drink with guests, and I'd leave every wedding with a dehydrated, overworked headache. I remember saying to everyone, "Well, if I don't leave with a headache, then I haven't done a good job." I grew out of that young DJ mind frame and became a bit more focused on mixing tracks and honing my skills as an MC and host. I don't really remember much about my earlier years as a DJ. Many weddings over the years have blended together, but I remember a few critical memories between 2017 and 2022. One of the most insane, out-of-the-body moments I've had was in 2018. We were in a downtown Cleveland venue on a beautiful summer night. There was a large number of toasts happening. Usually you have the best man, the maid of honor, maybe a parent or two, and a prayer. Sometimes the couple will speak for themselves, sometimes it's both sets of parents, and occasionally a random bridal party member or a sibling will also volunteer to give a speech. This wedding had 7 members of the bridal party speaking, and I correctly guessed that these were 7 longer speeches and not quick admissions of love. But the first speech immediately set the tone. This was not just a series of toasts, it was a roast. This roast lasted for a half hour and was one of the longest half hours I've ever experienced at a wedding. Many jokes were about how the bride was the man of the relationship. More jokes featured the groom's lack of balls and how the bride had bullied him into marriage. The bride and groom seemed fine with this roast, but I can't believe they agreed that a roast was appropriate, given the number of old people who watched on in horror between the balls joke or various dark and blue colored humor. Even their officiant joined in on the fun, calling them the perfect lesbian couple. I kept eyeing the room to see the reactions of the guests. Some were thoroughly enjoying the stand-up material, while a few looked a bit horrified. I specifically remember one old lady who looked like she had been teleported to the future and did not like what she saw. My worst wedding of all time was back in either 2018 or 2019. We were out in the middle of nowhere, Ohio. No cell service and back roads which hadn't been maintained since the Civil War. It was the kind of place that I wouldn't be caught dead visiting, although I would probably be found dead if I stayed too long. There were 200 people cramped into this cute but small barn. None of the guests wanted to listen to the instructions, making things like the bubble tunnel and the sparkler send-off nearly impossible. The best man's speech was covered in racist jokes, which caused the tightly packed barn to groan with indignation. The cherry on top was when a groomsman came up to me. "I've been a DJ for 7 years. You need to be doing more mixing," he ordered, a very pissy Matt Rebar. Like most mid-sized mammals and some apex creatures, my anger temperament is a slippery slope that becomes more aggressive on a short circuit. "Okay," I shrugged. "Anyone could do anything for 7 years. It didn't mean you were great at something or even that you'd spend a lot of time doing it." He continued to press me, and finally, I kicked him out of my DJ booth. He was swearing, I was swearing. There were more middle fingers thrown between him and I than an Italian mafia meeting between rival factions. He glared at me the rest of the night, and I offered him a smooch, which is a heavy offense to a dumb, drunk, straight white man. "We need to get out of here fast," I told my assistant when we began winding down. God forbid he tries to fight me. Another highlight was when I got to DJ a wedding at the House of Blues. Getting to DJ on the stage of House of Blues is one of those extraordinary little personal accomplishments that you don't realize you want until after you finish it. One time, a bride found out the week before the wedding that her soon-to-be husband had bought time with a sex worker, and yes, he had had sex. I wanted to clarify that it wasn't a therapy session or a flirty dinner. The bride told our staff that she would still have the party of her dreams, divorce him 6 months later, and get half his money. In my head, I wish I had the caliber of intellect, but unfortunately, I think I'd react emotionally and call off the wedding. I've been meaning to ask what happened, Juan said with a mystical sigh, as if picturing the epilogue in his mind. Most people think the wedding industry is filled with insatiable brides who demand the world and back. I've not met many bridezillas, although on occasion, you run into some Disney-level villains. The funniest constructive complaint I received was when a bride told my boss that I was sweaty when setting up equipment for her July outdoor wedding. There was a fix that I could have provided this bride this time. I could avoid being sweaty by not setting up equipment or DJing your wedding. One of the most uncomfortable moments I've ever had at a wedding happened during a groom and mother of the groom dance. The groom's hands were dangerously low, hovering above his mother's derriere. She had pushed herself in instead of leaving room for the Holy Spirit. Her dress had a slit bigger than a tent opening, and I could not help but watch with wide eyes as they gyrated and hipped into each other. "This is the sexiest groom and mother of the groom dance I've ever seen," I muttered to my co-pilot, Juan. Trust me, I've seen dirtier. The biggest issue I have DJing weddings has to be the equipment set up and tear down. We're lugging hundreds of pounds into vans and out of vans, carrying equipment across venues, up and down elevators and stairs, before doing the reverse at the night's end. Early on, I got into a hissy fit with my boss over a lighting rig. I had done everything I could, and so had my assistant. We had troubleshooted it, and my boss called to imply that I should know exactly what I'm doing on the technology side. We had a big blowout that resulted in the silent treatment for a couple months. We eventually regained focus, and my knowledge of technology improved. None of my mistakes were ever grave, but those appeared to happen to other DJs. Speakers would pop and fuzz, and subwoofers would explode. My favorite story was told secondhand. Two of our videographers flew a drone over a lake when the drone bugged out and began to fall into the lake. One photographer, Jake, dove into the lake to try and save the drone. He got soaked to the bone, and the only available clothes were my boss's bonus set. My prominent Italian boss was not petite, so Jake looked like a kid trying on his dad's suit for the rest of the shoot. Personally, I would have kept the wet clothes on. The following week, we were at a wedding with Jake, and he was standing near a decorative pond. I immediately shouted out, "Jake, watch out for the lake!" Over the years, loading equipment in and out of the truck at the office has become more accessible. When I started out, I was rolling boulders in a Sisyphus-like fashion. Not the sexually transmitted disease, but the Greek god who spent eternity rolling boulders up a hill. Crates and speakers eventually began being attached to wheels. Wooden coffins of materials turned into safer materials. We even got ramps in 2022 to ease the 2-foot jump from the ground to the truck interior. We usually eat what the guests eat. Always the chicken option, since it's cheaper. On a rare occasion, we're offered a very weak substitution. Think one of those boxed lunches with a soggy sandwich. One wedding featured the most disgusting-looking boxed lunch, so I ordered online at a sushi restaurant down the road and left the wedding. If you're not going to try and feed us properly, I feel no guilt in trying to find something decent to shove down my gullet. Another wedding venue served us turkey sandwiches. When I think of turkey sandwiches, I think tomato, lettuce, mayonnaise, and cheese, preferably Swiss or provolone. Upon inspection, we found that this turkey sandwich came with jalapeno, onions, and cocktail sauce sandwiched on a rock-hard Italian sub roll. It was absolutely revolting, as if the Food Network was in the hotel kitchen with a challenge for the staff. Open your mystery basket, chef. You've been given turkey, jalapenos, cocktail sauce, and a 4-day-old Italian sub roll. There must have been some kind of sadist working in the hotel kitchen that day. I have never seen a meal that skanky since. I was a vegetarian for the first year I DJed, and sometimes the vegetarian dishes were better looking than the meat meals. There would be decadent vegetable lasagnas, lush fields of harvest, divine pasta, and even a vegetarian pot pie situation that was to die for. However, vegetarian dishes also tended to be the worst dishes of all time. Mushrooms that looked like they had crawled off the set of Stranger Things, squash that looked like someone had squashed it with supple derriere cheeks. Eating meat isn't much better. Hotels especially love serving bland foods, chicken so pink and white that it looks like you're munching on a human arm. The saddest meal I've ever eaten was actually at a prom. It was being held at a country club, and the meat was so bland, I felt like I was in one of those science fiction films where they eat healthy glop instead of food. What made it sad was how perfectly cooked the brisket was. It pulled apart quicker than a middle school romantic relationship, melted in your mouth like room temperature butter, and was surprisingly lean, but it tasted like nothing. How hard would it be to find some kind of au jus, a pepper roast, something to give it a lift? One wedding featured just fish dishes. I've always hated seafood, so I just passed and went to eat the opening salad. I can't believe that fish was the default dish. I take the sad vegetarian meals any day over the fish. In 2022, I was DJing a wedding with assistant Jetty. Jetty is in their young 20s, slightly nerdy and somewhat cocky. We were setting up at a gorgeous downtown venue. The owners were two beautiful middle-aged sociable people. Think of Bonnie and Clyde if they opened an event space and Clyde had a sexy Latin spin. "I'm going to hook you up with the best drinks in the house," Clyde explained with a giant grin. "It's going to be so smooth. Do you like tequila?" "When building a new headquarters, does a giant corporation look for a local tax break? Of course I like tequila." Clyde ran off to the bar to make us a drink. It's always a better time when the establishment is appreciative. Granted, I'm being paid to do a service, but it can be a bit souring when an event space acts like they're the ones paying you. I've had event owners who demanded we pack up our gear by unachievable time results, owners who fed us like dogs, and even event spaces where we were blamed for the event space's limitations. Clyde returned with a deep brown beverage, which confused me. The only brown tequila-based liquid I've seen was an apple pie margarita, and given the floating orange slice in the drink, I didn't think tequila was in the drink. "It's bourbon with orange," Clyde said. Internally, I was vomiting. I hated dark liquors like bourbon and whiskey. I could slam back an apple royal shot in a liquor emergency, but even that feels like I'm on the brink of death. But with Clyde being so friendly, I had no choice but to sip on the drink. Clyde watched as if we were meeting his beloved. "How is it?" Clyde asked. "Delicious," I said with full enthusiasm. Considering the drink contained my nemesis, the end result wasn't too bad. It was palpable. And how many times do we go through with slightly uncomfortable things for the people we love or even just like? And I didn't know Clyde from previous experiences, but based on what I did know, the man had a generous heart. And his homemade whiskey cocktail went down a throat that otherwise would have refused passage. "We're gonna get you the best meals in the house, too," Clyde exclaimed, eager with excitement to share the food with us. "I can't break that man's heart," Jetty sighed, struggling to get through his cocktail. Like me, Jetty was anti-whiskey. "No, he's too nice," I said, taking a sip and feeling my throat protest casually. It wasn't a riot, but it was undoubtedly an upset rumble. Clyde returned later with the best dish in the house, which featured a giant hunk of salmon. Some would have been swimming in the delights of a perfectly cooked, natural-looking salmon slice, but both Jetty and I hated fish. Jetty later told me that he loved shrimp because it tastes like the sauce you dunk it into. To me, it doesn't feel like he likes shrimp. Saying I love shrimp because of the sauce is like saying you like the house because of the land around the house. Even if the yard looks great, what's the point if the college is untenable? Do you live on the lawn instead? "Oh no," I whispered when Clyde left. "The best food in the house is seafood. I hate seafood." "Well, what are we gonna do?" Jetty muttered. Because I liked Clyde, I ate half the salmon before realizing I couldn't do this to my body. My throat, already coated with whiskey, was buckling as I put the tinny, musky salmon in my mouth. To be fair, it would have been perfect for someone who enjoyed salmon, but I'd instead take the second or third best dish in the house that had no fish. Jetty and I smuggled the salmon off the plate into napkins and over to the trash. You would have thought we were trying to covertly plant a bomb. Later on, Clyde returned and asked us how the food was, and we both raved about the food in an Emmy award-winning performance. It didn't feel like a lie. The food was phenomenal. Our taste palates were just children unable to drink bourbons and salmon. I entered 2022 wondering if it was time to slow it down. I had done 28 weddings the previous year and felt like I still hadn't recovered, especially in the September-October period of the season. People in Ohio love having a fall wedding when the leaves turn, and the humid summer air turns into pleasant fall breezes. I do think my outlook was a bit dour, but 2022 provided to be, on record, my worst year for weddings. When I say worst, I don't refer to my work output. I've always retained a high level of pride and determination regarding my work. By worst, I'm referring to the issues, the surprises, the clients, and the general lack of fun. I had rough clients, heavy demands, a lack of trips, and a lot of thankless work. 2022 featured the most boring wedding I'd ever done. It started at 3 p.m. on a Saturday, which feels insensitive at the worst and bad planning at best. The ring actually went missing because the best man had dropped it, so countless guests were combing the grassy grounds to find the ring. Thankfully, the ring was found, but the best man was ridiculed for the rest of the night. For some reason, while I was waiting to start the entrance music, the wedding had just begun. We were 15 minutes away from the official start when the minister and groom began walking down the aisle. I hadn't been given any indication we were ready to go. This was funky because weddings notoriously start late and never begin early. I felt horribly because the dance floor was emptier than a craft store at 8 p.m. on a Sunday night. I tried everything, 60s, 70s, disco, old pop, new pop, 90s, R&B, slow songs, Latin songs. But the crowd was stiffer than a gay club at underwear night. There was a moment when a conga line of 10 people picked up, but even the conga line felt forced. The room cleared out, the dance floor remained desolate, and the wedded couple were extremely happy with my work. Another sad wedding was with a lovely couple who chose to do a barn wedding in July. Thankfully, it was a more relaxed day because even with it being 80, that barn soaked up more heat than a sponge in a bucket of water. The guests cleared out as soon as dinner was over. The bride came up to me specifically to say, "I'm surprised people left early, but some of my friends said they had to leave early because tomorrow they're going to Cedar Point." My mouth dropped further than Pamela Anderson's, "Are you serious?" That's my go-to when someone tells me something that seems so off base that it couldn't be real. "Oh, yeah," the bride said with a shake of her head. The barn was located 20 minutes from Cedar Point, so I could see why some people might turn their wedding Saturday night into a Sunday Funday park day. But to say that to the bride? And to leave at 9 p.m.? I know Cedar Point gets packed, but you can't hold off till 10 p.m. and act tired or something? Those were some bad friends, and if you're reading this book, be a better liar and use some caffeine to power through the reception or morning after. While my friends were enjoying their summer Saturdays, I was driving in the middle of an empty Ohio field when a foreboding sense of deja vu overcame me. We were less than 2 minutes away from arriving at the venue. "I think I know where we're going," I whispered, hands clutched on the wheel as if I had discovered we were characters in a Jordan Peele horror movie. "And if it is where I think it is, we're about to get to a steep dirt hill." Sure enough, my prediction became a reality as I powered a Penske truck to the same barn that had been home to the worst wedding I had ever DJed. I could feel the unlistenable crowds and argumentative groomsmen once again. "Oh my God," I whispered, as if in a film where the protagonist realized his life has been shattered. We stepped out of the van, although part of me wanted to drive the van up and away. Two men, one younger and one older, stood next to some wooden planks. "Hi," I said, pretending to be excited.
"Hello, we're putting the floor together," the older man said.
I smiled, not really sure what to say to that information. We went inside when the old man said,
"Well, can we help you?"
I was confused, so I looked at him and I'll admit, sassily said, "The floor guy wants to talk to me?"
"Well, I'm the owner," the guy said.
Oomph, talk about a foot in my mouth. Thankfully, I quickly recovered, and we chatted about the event overview. He was lovely, but certainly not the best at introducing himself. The onus of introducing himself was on him versus me assuming he was a point of contact. Why not just say, "Hi, I'm the owner"? The dance floor had yet to be created, so we couldn't set up. We were already tight for time, and this just felt like some poltergeist was making sure I was stressed out. The ceremony soon began, although no one told me about it. The mother of the bride walked up to me.
"Don't I have my own entrance music?"
"We're starting?" Quite often, I become the wedding planner. Part of the job of a DJ is to run the order of events and manage the event overall, but technically, it's not my job to run the event. I played the music for her, and she strolled down the aisle. The rest of the wedding was fine, and the ceremony melted into cocktail hour underneath the barn.
We made our way to dinner, where way too many people were trying to fit into the barn. The rest of the night went fine, even without cell phone reception. Finally, it was time to pack up, and I went and got the truck.
We arrive at wedding venues with giant loading trucks, the kind you would rent out when you move homes. I had initially parked the truck in the front, but the wife of the co-owning couple insisted I park it in the back. She didn't want me to park it in the back to be helpful. She didn't like the truck being an eyesore in the front parking lot. I don't know, I told her. I'd feel safer having the van in the front. The back parking lot was accessed by a road curved down an embankment into a small lot. I didn't feel comfortable with such a treacherous trip, but there was no convincing her. At the end of the night, I began backing up the truck to try and get around the embankment, only to get the truck stuck. When I'm in a crisis, I go from 0 to 100 quickly. I'm the kind of person that powers through the pressure, but all while my internal body screams and I say things like, "Kill me right now," as if God would hear that and take my life because of it. We were in the middle of backwards Ohio, with no cell reception and a stuck truck. I immediately pictured us stranded in darkness, unable to call for help. And if we did manage to get a bar of service, would the truck rental company be able to get here quickly? I probably wouldn't be home until 5 in the morning. What kept this from being an awful night was that the barn staff helped us push the truck out of the little hole it had fallen into. We swept our gear quickly into the truck and got the hell out of there. My next wedding had an adorable couple, but time management issues were out the butt. My schedule said that the bridal party introduction started at 6:25 p.m., but the venue had 6:15 p.m., and the photographers had 6:30 p.m. I didn't know who we should blame for this mix-up, but I assumed the bride and groom just messed it up. It was almost 6:40 p.m. when the photographers returned with the bride and groom. The bride had thrown up due to the heat and hydration. No worries. While the bride drank water and ate a peanut butter cookie, the photographers went to set up. "Are people normally this anxious about being a few minutes late?" the photographer asked me. I gave him a sharp look back. "Can we just get ready to go?" I countered, a bit aggressively, to which the photographer looked shaken. I wasn't trying to be overtly rude, but this was not the time for a semantics class. The photographer gave me a little attitude for the rest of the night. One wedding involved a comment from the couple's parents who said, "We have been waiting for our kids to get married ever since they were born." I was naturally confused because this had to be an exaggeration. Who gives birth to a child and immediately says, "Look at this child. I can't wait until they're married. We must ensure they're off to the courthouse as soon as they turn legal." Another 2022 wedding was a foray into equipment logistics. Since I work for a company, I take the equipment marked for me. I don't have to cherry pick anything. I just go there and swoop for supplies. My assistant Kuru and I were peacefully setting up when Kuru noticed we were missing the microphone for the ceremony. We have two setups, the main rig in the reception hall and a miniature kit for the reception. "I'll have to go get it. We need it," I sighed. I then made the 45-minute round-trip journey and returned with the microphone kit. "Did you get a mic stand?" Kuru questioned, seeing the microphone kit in my hand. "A mic stand?" I questioned. I instantly knew we didn't have a microphone stand and would need one for the ceremony. I walked down to the van and once more made the trip. Thankfully, Kuru spotted another piece of equipment was missing before I got to the office. Otherwise, I might have made 3 trips that day. I was striving to please early on when I was a wedding DJ, but 5 years in, I was growing frustrated with the simplest things. One wedding featured a reception in an outdoor tent and a ceremony space that was a 2-minute car ride down the lake. "Really?" I sighed, as if 2 locations separated by a 2-minute drive were 5 miles away. This same wedding had a cocktail space outside of the large hot tent. It had some of the worst cheeses I've seen and tasted in my entire life. A good cheese board keeps things simple. Cheddar, Swiss, Gouda, and a couple pieces of funky cheese. This cheese spread had a purple cheese that tasted like it had been stuffed up in a crevice for a while, and a green cheese that made you think of mold and tasted worse than mold. Did being luxurious mean we had to include weird-looking cheeses that people could all fawn over yet not eat since it was disgusting? The head caterer was trying to be casual and strict, which was a tricky balancing act. She was very nice to me and my assistant DJ, but I overheard her moments later. "I don't know who wanted the napkins to look like that." The head caterer pulled on the napkin to rearrange it by a few centimeters. "This is how I wanted them to look. We're not going to have slobby napkins today." The staff mumbled an affirmative and got back to work.
The head caterer, who I'll just name Maggie, came over a bit later.
"I know the introductions are slated at 6:30, she began, "but I'm wondering if we can speed this up. The cocktail hour was a 2-hour-long affair anyway."
I doubted that many guests were annoyed at the extended happy hour. Usually people were okay with drinks and conversation, especially if there was a good view. Had the cheese selection been better, it would have sealed the guesswork. I could tell that Maggie was just trying to wrap up her responsibilities quickly, which I could relate to. I loved when weddings went a little late, less responsibility for me.
"We can move it up," I said with a nod. I was very flexible with my fellow vendors, especially vendors who feed me.
"Perfect. We can aim to start around 6:15.
Maggie went on her way with a bit of a pep in her step. Moments later, Maggie was once again at our DJ booth.
"Well, don't hate me for this," the head caterer said with a meek smile, "but we are having a bit of a salad situation. We ran out of spring mix and have to run to the store."
We were in the middle of Where the Hell Are We, Ohio? The nearest grocery store, let alone a place you could get greens, was probably a good 15 minutes out. When we stopped at a gas station on the way in, they had every chip, candy, dessert, snack, and heavy item you could think of, but there was not a single vegetable or fruit to be found. You could have strawberry licorice or ketchup on your burger, but raw vegetables were a hard no. Anything resembling a dinner salad was non-existent. In fact, I think if you asked for arugula, the counter employees would have thought you were using a slur on them. The photographers came over, and I can't believe I had to tell them we had to keep to the original schedule and perhaps stall because of the spring mix.
"The spring mix is 7 minutes out,"
Maggie declared, as if the Pope or President were en route and we had 7 minutes to prepare everything for their arrival. I imagined a helicopter slowly dropping down next to the venue. The wind from the propellers flips over the cheese plate, probably for the best. Women clutch their fancy hats while men watch with intrigue over the machinery. The spring mix would disembark quickly from the helicopter. Maggie would thank the man for his time and dedication before immediately putting him to work. The photographer on site, who was serving a funny lesbian side character in a Netflix original series, loved that joke. "Can you imagine a plane flying overhead and dropping the spring mix into the lake like a drug bust?" she added. I let out a bombastic laugh. "Maggie has someone swim out into the lake to grab spring mix," I smiled. "Handle the package with care. It's the best stuff on the market." I didn't have the salad that night because it had celery. So I hope the imported spring mix went well with the guests who ate the salad. The rest of the food was questionable, to say the least. The kebabs looked like they had used meat stolen from a cryogenic laboratory hosting Walt Disney himself. The sauce was grainy, and I avoided the roasted vegetables. The veggies looked like they had been burned over a dirty stove in a restaurant featured on Gordon Ramsay's Kitchen Nightmares. Moments later, with the spring mix in tow, we lined up the bridal party only to have a board system meltdown. I scrambled at the moment, unplugging, unhooking, moving buttons, shifting inputs, all while the crowd watched with anticipation. If I had to rank my DJ skills as an RPG character, I'd say my best skills are being a hype man, shaping and controlling the atmosphere, and my natural voice abilities. I'm good at mixing, and my music knowledge is good, but my engineering side is the weakest. I like to view myself as the talent, and talent is not one to mess around with wires and cords. I clicked something together, and the sound finally flushed into the room. The whole hall gave me a round of applause like I had made a tiger jump through a hoop of fire. The rest of the wedding went without a hitch, except towards the end when drunk guests get very entitled. The sociologist in me notices that the more fun the crowd is, the more eager they are to dance, the more they complain and irk me. I had so many pissy people trying to get their bad requests in. One girl wanted Beyoncé's If I Were a Boy, which is a good song, but highly inappropriate for a wedding. It's not even a sad song you'd happily dance to. It's just sad. People think DJing is easy as pressing buttons, and that part of the job is straightforward. What's not easy is reading the room, reading a crowd, keeping the atmosphere up, and trying to control the vibe. The bride and groom noted they wanted hip-hop and modern, but they needed me to play more old songs for older people. I cut from Bodak Yellow into Come On Eileen into Shout, and it weirdly worked. The crowd was so drunk that I could have played me farting over a techno beat, and they would have danced to it. The couple chose their last song, a cute little EDM rap track, but when the event was over, we had herds of people surrounding the DJ booth to play some obscure song as the last song. I didn't want to play this song for a few reasons. The primary reason was the venue, which had made it clear that we had a hard out. Playing past the venue's end time never turns out well. The last thing I want is the event venue space yelling at me or neighbors calling the police because loud music happened after 11 p.m. Second, the couple had picked out their last song. They should have denoted it if they wanted another song as their last song. Weirdly, the song that the crowd wanted wasn't on any of the playlists or must-plays, so where did this song come from? The last reason, the most personal, is that I don't respond well to dickish comments. Some people think the DJ is a public domain creature, that a DJ will play whatever song an individual wants, but sometimes the individual's needs aren't working for the audience. Your bad song request isn't making my mixing board because it's either a putrid song or doesn't fit the wedding or brief I've gotten from the couple. It's like a philosophy trolley problem. Do I play September by Earth, Wind, and Fire, which will win over most of the room? Or do I play If I Were a Boy for that one person? Club DJs can easily mix in shitty requests, especially if money is involved. My friend Billiam once gave a DJ $20 to play Mr. Brightside. The DJ greedily took the money, like a snake seeing an egg out in the open. The DJ did play the song, but only for the first 2 minutes. It felt like we had witnessed a scam, but Billiam was more than happy to hear his song blasted over the room.
"Can you play something from the Supremes?"
a lady asked, looking at me like I was a devilish rogue for playing modern music. "What song by the Supremes?"
"I don't know, just a song by them."
Talk about an easy way for me to roll my eyes. You want me to play a specific artist, but offer no ideas or suggestions? It gets worse, though. One time, a slightly tipsy lady made her way to me.
"Can you play something else?"
"Else?" I do this thing when someone asks a stupid question where I give them a silly look with direct eye contact. I find that it makes them embarrassed for lauding their stupidity on me.
"Yeah."
As in,
"I don't know."
"You don't know?"
"Yeah."
"Just something else?" She finally got the point and slinked off, having provided no genuine impact. The funny thing was that most of the room had been dancing at that point to some old throwbacks. No doubt she wanted modern music to meet that modern mind of hers. One of my favorite venues in Cleveland to DJ at is Music Box Supper Club. It's a cute music venue on the Cuyahoga River, and part of why I love it is because we can plug directly into their system. No need to carry and push heavy subwoofers and speakers, we just bring a few things, and I can do my usual routines with a little less work. In the fall of 2022, I found myself at Music Box for a windy day, so windy that the vases holding flowers on the deck fell over and shattered. I wondered, would that be an omen of things to come? As the groom made his vows quietly later on, boats on the river began to honk and blast music below us. I couldn't make out anything from the groom, and more so the bride. The wedding continued with 6 toasts that took a half hour. I recommend that if you have a lot of toasts, make sure their speeches are short. Otherwise, it becomes an open mic night where people practice their jokes. The bride and groom had requested that when the bride's father went to give his last toast, the final and 6th toast, we play the theme from The Godfather. Because of my position on the floor, I had to rely on my assistant to handle the music. It was a straightforward ask. Hit play when the bride's father prepares to give his toast. Everything was shuttling along fine when I passed the microphone to the 5th speech for the groom's father.
"I've already said almost everything I wanted last night," the groom's father explained.
It wasn't like we could go back and read his statements from the night before. Most guests nodded as if they had been invited to the rehearsal dinner. In the middle of his speech, I could hear the strings from The Godfather. My ears and eyes snapped up and over to my assistant, who thankfully was looking in my direction. The snafu immediately boiled my blood, because there was one thing I delegated and asked of another, and it went more south than a pile of southern bells heading south down a grand staircase. When it was time for the music to be played for the actual father of the bride, the music was late and went exuberantly long. I continued to make a casual cut the music slash across my throat. My assistant, either not looking at me, daydreaming, or freestyling the music, did not notice the signal I was giving. It got to the point where I was violently slashing across my neck, eyes wide, and pushing my spiritual energy towards the direction of the DJ booth before my assistant finally noticed and cut the music. The father of the bride's speech involved a lot of language about his worries that his daughter was going to fall victim to liberalism during her move to college and a lot of potentially iffy statements in today's political climate. Sometimes I have to remind myself that I'm being paid, which means smiling and laughing when warranted. Some might feel like an ideological charlatan, but I'm willing to bend like a willow for some cash.
Most cocktail receptions feature a table decked with cheese, charcuterie, and breads. Sometimes, if the couple springs for it, they include fruit and meat. Additional still are dips and spreads like hummus. You know the couple spent money on catering if figs deck out the side of the platter. But there's one aesthetic look I can't stand, when pieces of cheese boards and charcuterie are used to decorate the table. While plates are adorned with meats and cheese, leftover elements sit off the plate like rat turds. It's just a turnoff, and I think it makes the table look picked over and messy. Let the crowds of guests make the charcuterie board dirty. This wedding featured a guest who I found annoying, but it turns out I was not alone.
"Can you play Lizza's happy birthday song for people who have birthdays?"
one cousin asked. "We're only allowed one Lizzo song," I said, pointing to my sheet where the bride and groom had written, "Only one Lizzo song."
"Well, you can play a couple,"
the cousin said poutily. "We're going to play the one that everyone knows," Juan said, alluding to Lizzo's hit song, About Damn Time.
"Which song?" the cousin asked. "Everyone knows all of her music."
I believe she meant it as a joke, but her face was a bit too serious for my liking. "No, they know like three songs," I muttered, trying to be a little dickish. It was not my loveliest moment, but I was not in the mood for this guest's sincere belief that everyone knew every single Lizzo song. We later discovered that the bride's one Lizzo song rule was due to this cousin in particular. The following week, we DJed a wedding with a few retro songs, but most of the songs that the bride and groom wanted were modern. One guest came up early, way before dance time, to request a song. It wasn't a bad song, just a song that didn't make sense. Some people think that the DJ operates as a personal jukebox, and that will just regurgitate their demands over the event flow. At the end of the night, he arrived with a smirk.
"Even though I preemptively put in my request, I'm upset you couldn't play it."
He spoke in that manly Caucasian politico, which is hard to not immediately respond with a rolled eye. "It just didn't really fit the vibe," I said casually and vaguely, showcasing no empathy.
"You're like the president. Thanks for all your hard work," he snorted before walking away, as if playing an obscure 80s song is enough to change America for the better.
Another 2022 wedding featured a friend of the couple who was a professional opera singer. She powered through a stunning Ave Maria during the ceremony as a gift for the couple. As impressive as her operatic vocals were, I was a bit jealous that instead of giving the bride and groom $100, she could just loan her voice. Nobody ever asks for a novel or a sexy music video for their wedding gift. Trust me, I'd do it. The worst wedding I DJed in 2022 was a series of minor weird errors. I was loading in with my assistant, not her real name Fergie, who could barely lift 10 pounds due to a bum knee. The load-in involved stairs, and you'd think we were in a 1950s comedy the way we were loading into the space. The wedding venue we were at was at a giant dome, which makes the acoustics bouncy, reverby, and wet. The enormous area made for terrible audio, which was exacerbated by a massive structure that blocked our DJ booth from the rest of the room. The bridal table and ceremony backdrop was made out of metal and silk. Our DJ booth was right behind it. I couldn't see anything, and therefore had Fergie act like a messenger in ancient wartime who would run between battles to deliver news. I was not feeling well heading into this wedding. I was 4 days deep on amoxicillin, on the second round of strep, back to back. Amoxicillin can cause your stomach to bloat and become upset, and I was in the throes of a stomach that felt like a boulder filled with air. I'd rather something happen, whether sitting on a toilet for a half hour or throwing up in the toilet for a half hour. To make matters more complicated, the second photographer had woken up sick, so only one photographer was present. Some industry experts later told me that the second shooter being absent wasn't a considerable loss. The couple thinks they're losing out on good photos, but experts tell me a vast majority of the photos used are taken from the lead photographer. With a missing photographer, I knew keeping the bride happy was essential. Before the ceremony, the priest approached me.
"I think I'm going to not use the microphone. I'm loud and everyone will hear me."
"That's fine with me," I explained. "I would just run it by the bride and groom."
"I will."
"As long as they approve, that's fine. If anything goes wrong, the onus will be on you." The priest laughed as if I was making a joke, and he thanked us and left. I turned to my assistant Fergie. "He thinks I was joking," I said to Fergie. "I was dead serious. I want it obvious that the fault is on him if he can't be heard."
The ceremony went smoothly, with Fergie acting like a Lord of the Rings tower soldier who lights fires to send messages. We were 20 minutes into a cocktail hour when the venue themselves wanted to start bridal party introductions a half hour earlier than scheduled. I was baffled, especially because the appetizers took so long to get out. The microwavable frozen apps had only been out for 10 minutes, and the candy table had been decimated due to hungry guests. The venue confirmed this drastic time change with the bride and groom, so we vaulted into introductions. The three toasts took less than 5 minutes, putting us 45 minutes ahead of the expected dinner time. Turned out that the venue, who had pushed for the early start, needed more time to be ready. In fact, it took most of that 45 minutes we had saved to wait for dinner food. There wasn't a vendor table on the dome floor. Instead, we got to eat in the pitch black darkness behind the stage until, minutes into dinner, we got help finding the mysterious light switch. The dinner was depressing. Cold vegetable lasagna that looked slimier than a conclave of snails. Excruciating boiling chicken that looked like it had been cooked on the surface of the planet Mercury. Cold, limp vegetables that whispered, "How could my life have turned out like this?" as they were loaded onto your plate. Freezing half-mashed potatoes with thick whole potatoes and a secret herb ingredient that gave it a weird Eastern European flair. Even the bread basket featured rock-hard bread that would be perfect to utilize in a public stoning. When we returned from dinner, we were immediately accosted by the bride's mother, who wanted us to move a dance up. I tried waiting for the photographer, but the bride's mother was impatient. Thankfully, the photographer managed to get some pictures. I started without the photographer being ready due to pressure from the mother, so let's hope the photos look good. But this was a great example of when you want things done without the opinion of others. The bride's mother wasn't done. She approached me moments later. "I don't mean to be rude, but when you lift your arms up, your stomach becomes slightly exposed, so if you could cover that up." I was aghast. My face was drawn into shock at her audacity. Thankfully, my part-time actor and event host experience kicked in, and I commented on how shocked I was. I promptly said I would address that by ensuring I wore a suit jacket. First, the bride's mom was no Cindy Crawford in a bathing suit. I would never fat-shame someone. The bride's mother, in this case, disagreed with that sentiment. She was on the huskier side of builds herself. If anyone related to a minor wardrobe malfunction, you would assume it would be her. In fact, the bride's mom's outfit looked like a conservative, awful 1980s knockoff Dillard's product someone got on a rack in the back storage room where they destroyed clothes that dared to exist in the first place. That back storage room belonged to an abandoned thrift store that hadn't been stepped into since 1992. Second, can you enjoy your daughter's wedding? Who cares about a little bit of skin when there are bigger fish to fry? Just enjoy the wedding. Third, we need to stop using "I don't mean to be mean" when we are trying to be mean. The bride's mom easily could have said that sentiment with a better tone. Let's practice two right here. Hey, sweetie, your stomach pops out of your shirt slightly. I don't know if you know, but when you raise your arms, your stomach pops up. I was seething after the mother left with her audacity, which was the size of the sum total of a family of 12's Costco shopping carts. I flicked 2 20s towards Fergie and told her that she would be DJing the 10 to midnight hours. After the first dances, we were scheduled for a dollar dance. My notes said that the DJ should explicitly announce the dance and start leading. Naturally, that was wrong, because Grandma wanted to speak for a few minutes about what a dollar dance was. None of this was on my itinerary and was news to me. I got very pissy about these details because I should have been notified beforehand. Just let me know at some point in the night that you want Grandma to talk. Otherwise, I'm just going to assume we are moving along as scheduled. Grandma, who couldn't hold or speak into a microphone to save a shrimp from a cocktail tray, led us into a polka. At this point, an old man hobbled up to the side of the stage. I went over to talk with him, thinking he would make a terrible request. "The sound quality sucks in here," the old man grumbled. "Well, I think it's the space." "Can you do something about it?" I wish I had the power to automatically snap my fingers and create soundproofing, but alas, as supernatural and scary as I might look, I am pretty human. "This venue hall is a large dome, a large room, not a good space for sound."
"Can you try something?"
I felt like the scenario where a customer asks for a product, is told they're out, and the customer asks if they can check the back. As if by reviewing the back, angels would conduct a magical delivery of the customer's desires. Yes, we heard she wanted a red-colored boot. Here you go, the angels say in a flurry of pretty sparkles. Out of nowhere, red boots save the day for the retail employee and the bitch-ass customer. These days, I imagine angels the way Revolutions describes them, as giant puffy balls covered with eyes. Imagine one of those giving you miraculous customer service. To appease the old man and play petty for myself, I went behind the speakers, subwoofers, and main mixing board and acted like I was examining and turning various knobs. It's like when you have to fake devour the plastic food young child serves you. Oh, this is delicious, a parent might say as they press the plastic potato to their lips. Ah, a fictional version of me exclaimed with a chipper smile and a Santa's elf demeanor. I had the shitty audio button turned on. It's turned off now, and the sound quality will be perfect. I returned to the old man with a slight frown that an emotionally astute person would have read as the correct petty smile disguised as a frown. I've done what I can. Hope that helps. I did not do what I could because there was nothing to do. The old man hobbled off talking about audio quality, and I internally cheered. I might not be allowed to be rude to the bride's mother, but that didn't mean I had to give a pristine service to a random guest. The dollar dance was cut short. It was supposed to last a while, but I guess everyone was cashless and forgot their Venmo at home. I played things off their extensive must playlist. I played classics that got everyone on the floor. I played line dance, retro, 90s, and modern, yet the floor could not catch fire. I turned the keys over to Fergie, who played every sizzling dance track, hip-hop number, and pop number to which anyone with a tingle in their limb would dance to. I was behind the stage, working on personal projects. Around 11:15, Fergie came to me. Everyone's gone. Really? I didn't believe she was accurate. The event went on until midnight. The bride left. There's like two people. I immediately stood up to find two lone, younger-looking adults slow dancing to a song that was undoubtedly not a slow dance number. The only other humans left were the waitstaff tearing everything down. I approached the event coordinator to wonder why everyone was gone. They thought it ended at 11, the event coordinator explained. In the contract, they give 6 hours, so they did homemade math and thought it ended at 11, but we agreed to go to midnight to give them that free hour. Another miscommunication to add to the pile that night. But this time, it was miscommunication I appreciated and benefited from. I quickly began pulling the plugs. At that point, I had 4 more weddings in 2022. Could I truly make it out alive? The following Saturday, I was pretty happy. The last few weeks, I had woken up feeling overworked and disinterested, but realizing the year was coming to a close and that I could count the remaining weddings on one hand made me, at best, neutral. The wedding was excellent, with plenty of dancers. The only funny moment came when we waited in the buffet line for food. The venue was an Irish place that served tasteless chicken, overstewed beef, broccoli that looked tortured, and mashed potatoes that felt too wet. Typical Irish-American fare. I apologize for the wait on the potatoes, the caterer said with a sigh. They'll be out shortly. It's like the great potato famine over here, I joked. Oh my gosh, a girl in front of me said. Too soon! No, it's not, I said, feeling like I had to recover from such an accusation. Was it really too soon? After 100 years, you can make historical jokes based on historical references, right? With 3 weddings left in 2022, my manic desperation to get through wedding season became more evident. For each wedding I do through the company, I usually get a call from Juan the Tuesday or Wednesday before to talk about the upcoming wedding. I just want you to know that the bride told me her mother might be overbearing. Rare as it was for me personally, an overbearing bride and groom felt within their right to be so. But an overbearing parent was always worse. To guarantee that their child has the best day of their life, they create original drama that stresses out vendors, coordinators, and their own children. It feels like a unique hell loop to be the parent originating stress over your child during their wedding. One of the things that the bride's mother was particular about was having 2 microphones, one for the officiant and one for the reader. I just can't see it as a one microphone system, the bride's mother had said. I could see it as a one microphone system considering I had done audio for 100 wedding ceremonies and it had always been one microphone. However, we showed up and made a 2 microphone system only to find out there was no reading and it was just the officiant and thus we only needed 1 microphone. The bride's mother remained on her best behavior, which had me wondering if the bride had said something earlier. With two weddings left in 2022, you would assume my hellish year would curtail with a whimper, but instead, one of the largest fuck-ups that has ever happened on my watch went down, and I genuinely was not at fault. Most weddings have a processional song, a bridal march, and a recessional song. However, this wedding had a single song for both the processional and bridal march. It was weird, but nothing abnormal to the point where I would question it. The ceremony was finally ready to go, 20 minutes later than planned. The event coordinator, in her haste, asked me to play the song and get started, only to tell me to delay by looping the song. The same orchestra song was looped twice before we finally had the show on the road. Finally, everyone and their mother had gone down the aisle, and we were waiting for the bride. I just stood there since the same music was supposed to play for the bride. The event coordinator gave me another thumbs up, which confused me. I made some hand motions that probably looked like wretched sign language. Finally, after the confusion peaked to a boil, we met on the sidelines. "Where's the bridal march?" the coordinator asked. "It's the same song." "No, there's a different song." "Should I play the recessional?" I asked in confusion. "Yeah," the event coordinator said. So I ended up playing the recessional song instead of the bridal march. Immediately, something felt off, and I wasn't sure why. While the ceremony was underway, I convened with the event coordinator. "I know she wanted the bridal march theme," the event coordinator told me. "That's not what I have," I muttered, not upset with the event coordinator, but with the lack of logistics from my company. I called my boss, who blamed the bride and the event coordinator for not communicating. The event coordinator blamed my boss for not sharing. I could feel my anxiety rising again. Earlier in the day, I had helped two friends in a pinch by officiating their wedding, so I was already in a discombobulated state. Due to the pictures the bride wanted, their reception started a half hour late. We switched some things around on the time schedule. Things finally seemed to be cooling down until a girl approached the booth. Everyone yells their requests over the booth. Loud music blares, and they're too lazy to walk the extra 7 steps to talk to me on the side. I've lately become impatient and have asked people to circle around because I can't hear them. The beauty is that some people think that my sign language-esque motion is telling them to go away. Unintended benefits are beautiful. One girl held a TikTok to my ear and asked if I could play the song. "I need a song title and artist," I said bitterly. "I'll go take a look." Another girl pulled up a YouTube song and claimed the groomsman would do a surprise dance. Playing it off YouTube is tricky because you must silence the video and its ad before it blares off the speakers. It's an athletic, artistic maneuver of buttons and timing. The groomsman did have a half-baked dance. The same girl demanded Latin multiple times, and another man requested the Monster Mash. "I'm gonna run that by the bride and groom," I said in response.
"I already mentioned it. They agreed."
Since it was a small wedding, I decided to roll with it, all things considered, and it went over well. After the wedding, I went home and grabbed a few hours of sleep before post-wedding morning brunch with the friends I had married the afternoon before. While enjoying brunch, I realized I had left their marriage license in the truck I had rented the night before for the other wedding. Horrified, I left brunch early to drive to the truck rental place to grab their marriage license. Thankfully, I arrived 15 minutes before they closed. At this point, I was glad that I had one remaining wedding that year. The last weekend of wedding DJing for 2022 was a mess for almost everyone. One DJ, I'll name Richard, got into a few tiffs with the event coordinator. He wrote a Facebook status saying, "Ladies, never hire your friend to be an event coordinator." Apparently, Richard had friends at the wedding and someone ratted him out to the event coordinator herself. She ended up calling our boss and making a stink. But considering it was Richard's personal Facebook page and that it wasn't technically calling her out, my boss didn't care at all. Lessons to take away. Don't post things day of. Never trust your friends enough to assume they won't rat you out. And if the glass slipper fits. Meanwhile, boss Sean and his assistant Albert had a run-in with another event coordinator. They had been told earlier by a server to go to one location. Lo and behold, the event coordinator arrived, screaming how they had to move it now.
"I kept telling her she was not allowed to talk to us like that," Sean muttered. "So then after some yelling, we finally did move. But can you believe that?"
"I don't know why you would believe the server or an event coordinator,"
the event coordinator had apparently snarled.
"She emasculated the server."
"I don't know about emasculated. More of a power and status move, if anything," I cooed. But while others dealt with the regular onslaught of inefficiency, difficult, and general toxicity, my last weekend was a beautiful fun ceremony where I raffled off gift cards to attendees and played fun jams throughout the night. It was a great way to end a questionable year with a reminder of why I'm an entertainer in the first place.